There are very few people about whom one can say simply, so-and-so is dead, and the whole world knows who you mean. Charlie Chaplin was one of those, and he died early on Christmas Day at his home in Switzerland. He died peacefully, his doctor said, of old age, 88 years old, surrounded by his family. Tonight, some memories of Chaplin, with reminders of his films, and the observations of three people who have thought a lot about him. In New York, Adolph Green, playwright, lyricist, and performer who knew Chaplin personally. In Washington, Kathleen Carr, who teaches film history and comedy at Catholic University. And Frank Getline, movie critic and author. Jim?
Robin, Charlie Chaplin's life off screen was not played for laughs. His personal and political activities were the subject of much scandal and controversy through the years. He was married four times and had 10 children, but it was an alleged 11th that titillated the American public in the 1920s. A 24-year-old woman claimed Chaplin was the father of her child. Chaplin was tried for taking the woman over state lines for immoral purposes. He beat that charge, but lost a paternity suit the woman filed against him. There was the matter of his income taxes. The U.S. government at one time accused Chaplin of not paying more than $1 million worth. Then the political problems. Chaplin's views were very much to the left, and although he denied he was a communist, neither the government nor many others seemed to believe him. When he went abroad in 1952, the U.S. government refused him permission to re-enter the states on the grounds of immorality and sympathy to communism. Chaplin then moved to Switzerland, where he lived the rest of his life. He did make peace of sorts with the United States in the early 70s, settling his tax problems with the government and returning to receive a special Oscar. In 1975, he was knighted by the Queen of England. But it's his life on the screen that holds the most memories of Charlie Chaplin. He started making movies in this country in 1914, and here is a clip of his first one, Making a Living. Ms. Carr, what is particularly special or significant about that first movie?
Well, we don't see him in his usual tramp role that we're accustomed to seeing him in. In Making a Living, it was his first time on film. He wasn't sure what to do with film. All he was familiar with was the music hall that he'd been playing in England and touring in America.
He was a vaudeville performer.
Definitely,
before,
yeah. And he'd done professional, legitimate work as well as a child and a teenager. But he really made his reputation on the music hall.
Well, Frank, let me ask you, is there anything in that movie that you could, if you'd looked at it then, you could have forecast what was to come as far as Charlie Chaplin?
No, you couldn't. not a bit of it, because Charlie Chaplin, as we know him and love him, simply didn't exist yet. But you can see Charlie Chaplin's marvelous teacher, Max Senata. And it is not true that Charlie got everything he eventually became from Max Senata, but it was a marvelous booster. And he took off at once. In the second movie, he became the little tramp, Charlie Chaplin. But it was Senate's insane pacing that created the whole, most of the comedy of the silent film, and various people made variations on it, the most important of which was certainly Charlie Chaplin, went far beyond Max Senate into...
And this was a Senate film, his
yes,
first
it was.
One. Senate's the one who first put him in movies.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Green, I read today that during that first year that Chaplin made movies, he made 35 that first year. How do you look back on that first year, and particularly this first movie, in terms of what there is there to see about Charlie Chaplin, how it may have influenced him later?
Well, I think he just learned overnight an entirely new craft, and applied it instantly to all he had learned in the Carnot Music Hall and all his. His early years of poverty in London, which was, I think, the most important part of his life, his first 12 years in which he had to survive under the most miserable Dickensian circumstances, and suddenly it was all there, and it was a quick distillation. It was the equivalent of many years of education of all kinds, and suddenly it arrived, And very rapidly, it became. He turned it into the character that flourished so marvelously for many years thereafter.
Is it, Ms. Carr, is that pretty well the given that his NPR, I think he started when he was 9 years old, didn't he, performing?
He was on stage when he was five.
When he was five.
Right. His mother became ill, and his father kicked him on the stage, literally, and told him to do something.
Did he essentially do anything different later than he did when he started in five and, you know, during those early years? Was it the Charlie Chaplin?
Well, it wasn't the Charlie Chaplin that we think of today. This is something that came with the movies.
A five-year-old kid.
Yeah, this is a five-year-old kid playing
Charlie
Chaplin.
He was learning the skills of the music hall, the tumbling, the falling, how to make people laugh, sure. And everything that went with it, he was learning. It was his college.
All right, well, let's go to his next phase. Robin?
Yeah, it was in that same year, 1914, the Keystone era, Chaplin made, as Jim said, no fewer than 35 films, working out the rudiments of the comedy technique and the character of the Little Tramp, which became his trademark. And another film of that period was Laughing Gas. Adolph Green, what does that film show? It's very broad,
yes.
Even bawdy slapstick.
Right, right. And this was always part of Chaplin's equipment. He was never the wistful little fellow. He was always a fighter, no matter how wistful he became when everything was exposed, as in the final scene of City Lights. But he was always a fighter and always, you know, ready to eat, to survive. And it's fascinating to see Max Wayne in that thing, because I mean, just some years later, and it wasn't that long in the measure of things, it was probably 11 years later in 1925 that he made the brilliant, you know, masterpiece Gold Rush with the same Max Wayne.
We're going to see a bit of that a bit later.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ms. Carr, what themes do you see as the film historian coming together in that bit, where you see the Little Tramp fairly fully formed, don't you there?
Yes, you do. The fascinating thing is, first of all, to see Charlie in the whole several thousand year tradition of comedy that's developed with the ancient Romans, for example. The whole concept of slapstick came from them. But what's interesting here is Chaplin himself talking about how he evolved this persona. Now, this is from his autobiography, which, of course, in afterlife, one always mellows and looks back and sees things a bit clearer. But apparently, the combination of his experience as a child in the slums of London, his music hall experience, and then the Max Sennett School itself, combined so that early on by his second and third films with Sennett, he had evolved this tramp persona. He talks about it, and he says that one day he just walked into the dressing room and tried on a pair of Fatty Arbuckle's very, very baggy pants. Arbuckle was a huge man. And then he tried on jackets from some of the very skinny Keystone cops, and he decided that it worked. He went out to try it in front of the camera. It did work, and this is the way we really think of him today.
Frank Getline, what do you see differentiating him already at this stage from the others, the film comedians of the era, like Keaton and Lloyd?
The thing that distinguished him immediately was his fast assumption of command of the actual movie-making process. And Chaplin very swiftly became his own producer, director, writer, and composer of music. Although we call them silent movies, they all had scores, and he wrote his own scores. And therefore, everything was integrated. He was not pushed around by directors. He was the what the French now call the auteur system of making movies. He was the first auteur.
Well, thank you. Jim?
All right, the early Chaplin films tend to be divided into categories determined by which film company he was working for at the time. He started with Keystone and then to S&A Films and Mutual Films. The Mutual Films were all two-reelers made in 1916 and 1917. Three of the most famous from that era were The Adventurer, The Immigrant, and The Cure, all made in 1917. Frank, this particular period is considered his very best, is it not?
I don't know. I think he went on to the really full-length movies later. City Lights and Modern Times probably are the peak. But even that first ice cream sequence, you've got a typical Chaplin thing, which he extracted from life and made it is character and comedy at the same time, an absolutely hilarious comedy, as we saw. But the character is that of a social situation with which we're all familiar until we finally achieve total ease. of a disaster happening to him in company. Namely, the ice cream is falling down his pants, and he goes through five, six, seven different things to conceal this, to deal with it, you know, kind of behind the scenes, and at the same time present an affable, socially competent person to the woman he's trying to impress. And then, of course, it does drop down into the bosom of the lady below. That's the final topper.
Ms. Carr, I noticed, of course, in The Immigrants particularly, here was a situation that is normally a very sad situation. Here you had a comic thing cutting back and forth, which if you were to take the pictures of the immigrants on that boat by themselves, would be a very sad, tragic kind of thing. That's tough to bring that off, is it not?
Well, yes. Chaplin was interested in taking something that was familiar to millions of people, like the coming to America, and making us all see that it was something that we all really partook of, and that there were funny parts to it. They were in steerage, they were dirt poor, but they could still enjoy life. They were people like the rich.
Mr. Green, on comic technique, I was reading something today about Charlie Chaplin where he said that he felt that if there was any secret to his comedy success, it was his ability to know when to exercise restraint, when not to go too far, when not to milk a joke too much, in that fine line. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, how otherwise? I mean, for instance, his masterpiece, *Miss City Lights*. He took almost 4 years to make that, and he kept changing casts and reversing them and shutting down the studios for months because he was not satisfied that he thought things were going too far, getting out of hand, and he kept cutting all the time till the story was told and the gag was told just the right proportion.
Is that the single most crucial element to comedy? Would you agree with Chaplin, not necessarily in relationship to him, but in relationship to all comedy? When to draw the line, when to stop, when the joke, when you've got that fine moment?
Well, those are the varying degrees that go between talent and genius. And Chaplin had a great deal of genius, and he knew just when to bring the exact response that was needed from an audience, and when to cut it off, and when to switch. It was that thing that people always discussed about, that little path between tears and laughter, which I think he had, you know, an incredible grasp of. Without rarely being mawkish, you know. So there are things that are caught in the period, but most of his finest jokes and his finest tears are something that draw a response from all walks of humanity, the youngest, the most youthful, to the most sophisticated.
All right, Robin.
Chaplin was probably best known today for the films he made for United Artists, many of them still in circulation. He founded the company along with Mary Pickford and Douglas Fairbanks Sr. and went into making full-length features. The Gold Rush, made in 1925, is considered by many to be his first great film. That must be one of the classic scenes, Adolph Green, of all of them. He now had his own studio and total command of a production by this time. How does that show up in his approach to this sort of thing? How is his approach changed as a result of having all that control?
Well, the thing is that his pictures were fewer, far between, and carefully conceived. I know the Gold Rush, I think, was originally inspired by his reading about the Donner Pass, and about the fact that the people had taken to eating each other and one another, and so the base of this hilarious comedy was the terror and
the
horror
tragedy
of cannibalism and tragedy and human survival, and I think the further he went on, the more infrequent pictures became, the more they were really based on his inner turmoils, his inner problems, his memories of his entire life, not directly reflected, but a part of everything in the pictures. I'm sure a picture like City Lights, that a great deal of the conflict of the picture had to do with the millionaire who never recognized him when sober, but only when drunk, and the little tramp. I think two of them were elements of himself.
Miss Carr, where does this fit into the evolution of the Chaplin film, in your view as a historian?
Well, I think Mr. Green just hit it on the nose. He said that the Gold Rush is based, that one scene we just saw, is based on a very fearsome, frightening situation. And this really is the nitty-gritty behind all true comedy. We need to learn how to laugh at those things which frighten us. And this is why the clown figure, the fool figure, has been so important throughout the history of mankind. We've always needed this scapegoat, the person who, by making a fool of himself, could make us see more closely into ourselves, to understand ourselves, and to laugh at that which is foolish in us and around us. This is what's so magnificent and important about comedy.
Thank you, Jim.
Let's talk for a few minutes about Charlie Chaplin, the man. Frank Gehlein, Mary Pickford said that he was a real stinker.
I'm not that great an admirer of Mary Pickford. I thought her husband was a hell of an actor, man. I don't know. I think the life, you know, the life and the work, as Mr. Green was saying, are very intimately tied up. I see a lot of this as Charlie Chaplin as the little man against the idiot machine that is attempting to dehumanize and destroy us. And that is very specific in modern times, but aspects of it begin with the Gold Rush and go all the way through. And they also turn up in his life. I think, you know, the kind of idiotic anti-communism that drove Chaplin out of the country and kept him out of the country could be described as an idiot machine. As the society and the economy that he throws himself against in movie after movie, Gold Rush, you know, really is a comic version of greed. Greed is what is motivating the Gold Rush, quite literally, and turning people into gold-grubbing machines. And he throws himself against that marvelously.
Mr. Green, you knew Charlie Chaplin personally. Was he a funny man, period, or was he an artist who could become funny as a professional? Or was he funny just sit down and talk to?
He was at times not funny at all, and times very much a middle-class man, concerned with the everyday things of life, and at times hilariously funny. I once saw him improvise an entire comedy to a piece of Darius Milhaud's called Le Boeuf sur le Toit, which had been written as a score for a Chaplin picture, but not any, just a whole, the concept of Chaplin. And one night, Betty Cum and I were at a house in Hollywood that we shared, and Chaplin came over and we played this piece for him, and he performed an entire two-reel comedy, ducking behind the sofas, escaping from the cops, and it was just an incredible experience.
Mm. Robin?
Laurence Olivier, who is no mean comedian himself in another form, said on hearing of Chaplin's death he was probably the greatest comedian of all time. Is that too much to say about him?
Not even remotely too much. He definitely was. I think he's one of the, in the world of art, you say Stravinsky, Picasso, and Chaplin. And then also in the world of comedy, you'd say, Chaplin and Groucho and Buster Keaton. But Chaplin bridges both the popular arts and the most serious of arts and fuses them into one.
Miss Carr, in a word, how would you like to sum him up?
Well, Chaplin would have been a classic at any period in history, but he was lucky enough to walk into the motion picture. And motion picture is what made him a hero, a the comedian for eternity, let's say.
Yeah. Frank Gehlein?
Moving in every sense.
Yeah. And would you like to have a quick opinion from each of you in a word on your favorite Chaplin film? Which is yours, Adolph Green?
Well, it happens to be City Lights, followed closely by Modern Times, just because the years I was growing up, the years of the Depression, I feel an incredible affinity.
Kathleen Carr?
I love his mutuals, The Cure, which we only saw a small piece of.
The short ones.
Yes. Terrific. Oh.
Yes.
And Frank?
I'll go with City Lights, but I have a powerful feeling that my original antipathy to Monsieur Verdoux is changing. I think it's probably going to end up with a great movie.
Well, thank you all very much for joining us this evening. That's all for now. Good night, Jim.
Hi, Rob.
And thank you, Mr. Green.
Thank you.
That's all for tonight. Jim Lehrer and I'll be back tomorrow night. I'm Robert McNeil. Good night.